Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Covington off the feet from Towns. Rob Covington out of the corner with the three. Covington. What a night. Covington. And Rocco in transition and one. And the Timberwolves just like that push it back to a 19-point lead.
Yeah, good morning, H-Town. The voice that you hear right now is not the voice of my guy, Sean Pendergast, the bald one. And you will not hear Seth Payne this morning, the bold one, because both of those guys have been burning both ends of the candle for this entire football season. Football season over, those guys earned a day off. And they picked a perfect day to be off for us because the Rockets messed around and made a big-time trade last night. Now, this is my voice that you're hearing right now is Wade Smith, 12-year NFL vet, former Houston Texan, and lover of all things sports. I'm joined, of course, by my guy Cecil Shorts, 6-year NFL vet and lover of all things sports. And we got my guy Jonesy holding us down behind the boards. But when you went to sleep last night, the Rockets still had Clint Capella on the roster. There was rumors about him being traded to the Atlanta Hawks and at about 11:30 so p.m. What ended up happening is the Woj bomb was dropped and the deal was consummated. And so the Houston Rockets acquired Minnesota Timberwolves Robert Covington, a 3-and-D guy, and traded Clint Capella to the Atlanta Hawks as part of a 4-team, 12-player deal.
Wow.
The NBA's most expansive trade in nearly 20 years saw the Timberwolves acquire two first-round picks, including Houston's 2020 pick, which they moved to Denver to the Denver Nuggets for guard Malik Beasley and forward Juan Hernangómez. I can't pronounce that name. That's a doozy. But the deal has been done. Of course, the Rockets get back Robert Covington and Jordan Bell from the Minnesota Timberwolves, who was a former Golden State Warrior. Of course, the Rockets played against multiple times in the playoffs. And so, Cecil, what is your initial reaction when you hear this trade?
Well, you know, it's been, I guess, talked about that they, you know, I think the last three or four games, they've been doing really well with the small ball lineup.
Yeah.
And then without Capella, they've been, I don't know, 9-1, maybe 10-0 without Capella playing really well.
10-1 now because they won last night.
So they did win last night. They beat the Hornets last night. So yeah. It's interesting. And then I'm not surprised. Morey finds a way to do anything each and every year to figure out a way to get in the hunt, to make his team better. Do I think they got better? Yes, I do. I think Covington is a good 3-and-D guy. He plays good defense. He can hit threes. He doesn't. He won't. And then he'll help on the offensive end tremendously. But I don't know if P.J. Tucker is your center. How are they going to deal with the Lakers and the Clippers and the Nuggets when they have, you know, Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee, what's the guy in Denver?
Jokic.
Like, yeah. When those guys come, Montrezl Harrell for the Clippers, it's I don't know how they're going to rebound. I don't see it.
Yeah, and that's the first – my first thought about it, I was like, wait a minute. So because they were talking about bringing in Kevon Looney in some part of a deal when
they got
rid of
Capella buckets last year.
Yeah, and so I was really excited about the idea that Kevon Looney would be here in Houston because I thought he would bring something huge to the table as far as him being able to play defense down low, can get you a few buckets like he did to Clint Capella. And so – when the deal was consummated and he wasn't part of it, I was like, man, what the hell is going on? But when you think about it, the Golden State Warriors put together a blueprint of how to win a championship playing that small ball. And so when you take one of those guys in Jordan Bell that was there for multiple runs for the Golden State Warriors and you bring in Robert Covington, you've seen the success that the Rockets have had over the past week or so since Capella's been out. and all year long when they played that small ball lineup, you got to say they got better. I would have to say they got better. Did they get good enough to go on a long playoff run? I think that's the question. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't think so. I think, obviously, I think before the trade, I was big on I think they were going to be one and done in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I just think they were going to be first round. Depending on who the matchup is, they might be out because the West is pretty tough, especially in the top five, six teams. But now I think they can get past the first round. I can see them going to second and fighting to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, but it all depends on the matchup. And if you're going small ball and you have to go against the guys that can match up with you and bring bigs in, it's going to be tough on you.
Yeah, and speaking of small ball, Mike D'Antoni the other day was talking about that idea of doing that and how he felt, the reason why he came up with the idea to go that way. And so let's see what D'Antoni had to say the other night.
The biggest thing is Russell. How can we get what he does best, and that's to get to the rim. How can we capitalize that on 100%? And, you know, sometimes you're afraid to try it when you have bigs and Clint's around and whatever. You're just kind of afraid to. And then actually the Utah game, so hey, why not? Let's try it and let's look at it and see what it looks like. Now, he wasn't in there at the time, but then you can imagine with him being in there what it would have looked like. And we just have a unique team that's different. And, you know, people might say it's gimmicky or whatever, which, it's not gimmicky. It's doable. And, you know, I think we'll get better at it and we'll get better defensively. And, you know, we just have to watch the second chance points. And, you know, and that's one of the things. Be sure you guys, when you criticize it, don't say they get out-rebounded by 25. That's not a stat that even matters. So if they say now they scored eight more second chance points, okay, they scored eight more. You know, I get that, but not. You know, I was listening to some commentaries like, oh, they've got 26 more rebounds. So, I mean, you could have 25 offensive rebounds in one possession and score 2 points. That doesn't hurt. So it's a little bit different.
And then Mike, after that, talks about the possibility of going small for the rest of the season.
As much as you like the way it's looked with the small ball, could you imagine going a season the rest of the year 6-6 and under, 6-7 and under?
Yeah, just imagine. Yeah, I think you can. I mean, what's the best lineup in the last 5 years, 6 years?
Oh, the death lineup?
Yeah, Van Mugley and Green at 6-6, 6-5 at center. And now they did have Durant at 7 feet or 6-11, whatever. That's it. So, you know, if we can find Durant out there, somebody like that, you know, we'll be fine.
And there you have it. D'Antoni just let you know off top. I guess that was a couple days ago in practice. Like, hey, man, this is what is potentially going to be the way that the Rockets will throw out a team for the rest of this season. And the deal was made last night to send away Clint Capella, send away Nene, and a first-round draft pick, and they get back in the deal, Jordan Bell and Robert Covington. And so it's a good thing that you have a blueprint in front of you to go out there and try to win a championship. Will it work? I'm not so sure about that. But, hey, what does D'Antoni have to lose, man? He's on the last year of the deal. And
Very true.
We'll see what comes up with the Houston Rockets. But we'll talk about that and much more coming up next. Yes, this is Payne and Pendergast, but of course, my voice is not that of Sean Pendergast. My name is Wade Smith, 12-year NFL vet, former Houston Texan, and I'm joined by Cecil Shorts, 6-year NFL vet and former Houston Texan. And
Weren't you a Pro Bowler?
I was a Pro Bowler, but I never said that about myself.
Well,
I let other people, when they introduce me, they'll put that part out there. It's known. I got a lot of titles, man. Executive Director of the Wade Smith Foundation. You
humble
know,
brag.
Sports Radio 6. I mean, I'm just saying, if I go through all of them, we'll be talking about that the whole time instead of talking about the fact that the Rockets made a trade, man. Last night, if you're just now waking up now, the Rockets made a trade last night. It was a 4-team trade. That included, of course, Clint Capella being traded to the Atlanta Hawks. In exchange, they got Robert Covington and Jordan Bell of the Timberwolves. They had to get rid of and let go of a first-round draft pick this year, 2020. And then also, Hilario Nene is no longer a Houston Rocket. And so, if you went to sleep before 11 o'clock last night, you thought everything was sweet and maybe something would happen tomorrow. It didn't work out that way. And so Adrian Wojnarowski gave some little insight on what he thought what the trade was, and we'll react to that next.
Key players in this, Robert Covington from Minnesota to Houston. That's the big wing player they wanted. Atlanta gets the center, Clint Capella. They've been on the market for. And then Denver moves out Malik Beasley and Hernan Gomez. They go to Minnesota in this deal.
Okay.
Minnesota gets Atlanta's first-round pick via the Brooklyn Nets. So they'll have now another first-round pick coming in this draft. You know, all this culminating tonight, this 4-team deal, when talks between Minnesota and Golden State, that would have added to that 3-team deal, a 4th team, it would have been D'Angelo Russell, Andrew Wiggins. Those talks fell apart, and then Minnesota pivoted, got Denver involved, and they just got the deal done now.
Wojbomb always comes through in the clutch, man. And so what's your initial reaction to the trade, and who actually won it, in your opinion?
Who won the trade?
Yeah, who won? Ooh, somebody's always got to win and somebody's got to lose. So who won the trade, man?
It's 4 teams in the trade, and I do think Capella to the Hawks is very interesting. I think Trae Young is playing at an all-star level.
Yeah.
Not sure if he's an all-star. Is he an all-star this year?
I'm pretty sure he is. Is he not Jonesy? I'm not sure about that. But
I know he's averaging, I think he's top 5, top 7 in scoring this year. Assists, he's in the top 5 easily.
He's going to get you buckets now.
He's playing lights out, and I think he'll do a really good job of pick and roll with Trae Young and those guys there. Denver, not sure who they got in the trade off the top of my head right now. I just forgot that fast.
So Denver received Shabazz Napier, Keita Bates Diop, and forward Noah Vonleh. They got some interesting names on these NBA guys. I mean, it's a lot of, I guess it's a, I don't know.
So I think Denver got depth. I think they got Gerald Green, looks like, too, but he's injured right now. So Denver got depth. If I had to pick a person that won the trade, I would say Houston won the trade, with Atlanta being a close second. I think Houston wants to go small ball.
Yeah.
Like they talked about, earlier. And I think they've gotten better as far as getting Jordan Bell, who's, like you mentioned in the last segment, he's been in the Warriors lineup where they have been in small ball situations. And then bringing in a guy like Robert Covington, who can shoot the three, who can play defense, who can score, who'll probably be an instant starter right away from what we talked about offset. Or off air, excuse me. I think they got better. Now, the question for me is, will that better be better enough to get you to the NBA Finals or get you to the Western Conference Finals? I'm not sure.
Well, the blueprint has been laid by the Golden State Warriors with their death lineup. You know what I mean? And so the death lineup for the Warriors consisted of Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, and then whoever that fifth person was, it tended to trade. I mean, of course, it was this year was Kevin Durant. Or the past couple years, it was Kevin Durant. So, yeah, those five guys. Well, the Rockets' death lineup is going to consist of Harden, Westbrook, Gordon, the newly acquired Robert Covington, and then P.J. Tucker. So the question is do you think that lineup, how do you think it matches up with the other teams in the Western Conference? Because getting to the NBA Finals, you got to get through the Western Conference. And so right now, when I hear that lineup, when I see that lineup, it's interesting. I mean, there should be more ball movement. They should be able to run. But will that be a lineup good enough to compete with the likes of the Los Angeles Lakers and L.A. Clippers, the big boys in the West, Denver, Utah? I think for sure it allows them to pass Denver and Utah. I don't know if it gets them on the level of the two L.A. teams, though.
I think if you look at the Warriors, and they had that lineup where they went small at times, but they had options to go big as well. So I took a list of guys that they had that were 6'10 or higher, starting with Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Even though he probably is 7 feet. I seen a picture of him taller than DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah. It's funny how that works in the NBA. They make the guys that are supposed to be taller, you know,
yes,
shorter,
absolutely.
And then the guys are supposed to be shorter, taller.
So you got DeMarcus Cousins, who was there previous years, Kevin Durant, Andrew Bogut, who was a big part of what's going on there, JaVale McGee, Kevin Looney, Zaza Pachulia, Anderson Varejao. I was there a couple years. They had options to go big. So
yeah.
they had chances to go, okay, depending on who they're playing, what's the best matchup for this game, this team. They had options to go big. They had options to help with the rebounding. And then they could go small ball. With the Rockets, I feel like it's all in on one situation. It's all small ball. I don't know if Tyson or Isaiah Harrison.
I think it's Haverstein.
Haverstein. I don't know if they can come in and give you quality minutes and help out in that way. I think it's all in on small ball, and that kind of worries me when it comes to different matchups.
Well, I tell you what, man, Tyson Chandler is going to have to give you some quality minutes
because you
got rid of Capella, you got rid of Nene, so you don't have any other options down low except for Capella and Haverstein. So those guys are going to have to play at a high level, and it's going to be for a spot period of time. It's not going to be for extended runs. Mm-hmm. At that spot, because like you said, the Rockets are all in on the death lineup. They're all in on playing small ball, and they've had a bunch of success with it so far this year. You know, you're 10-1 without Capella in there because he's had various injuries throughout the season, and they've looked good. The ball has moved better without Capella, and so I'm glad they made the deal. I would have loved to get a guy back like Kevon Looney, but unfortunately, they couldn't make that happen. But with the guys they got back with Covington, I think it's going to be a great option with 3-D. And then you got Jordan Bell, who's been through the battles and is an athletic guy and a long wing that can play defense and also get you some buckets. And you always want to have athletes. I'm good with the trade. So when we come back to Payne and Pendergast, we'll be talking about the new GM of the Houston Astros coming up next. Yes, it is Payne and Pendergast, and I am Wade Smith, and joined by Cecil Shorts. We're filling in for Payne and Pendergast. Seth and Sean got a couple of days off because they've been putting in a lot of work this whole NFL season, so they got a couple of days to themselves. But you got us for the next about 3.5 hours, so stay tuned here with us. The Rockets made a big-time trade last night. If you're just now waking up, I'm sure you do not know. But Clint Capella was traded along with Hilario Nene and a first-round draft pick. They went to the Atlanta Hawks, and so the Rockets got back Robert Covington, a 3-and-D wing player, and also got back Jordan Bell from the Minnesota Timberwolves in the deal. And so we'll be talking about that throughout the show. But there was more big news in the city of Houston. And I'll tell you what, the city of Houston, when it comes to sports, is the gift that keeps on giving. There's always something to talk about. And the Astros have a brand new GM, and Jim Crane introduced him yesterday to the media.
Today we were excited to announce James Click as our new general manager. Congratulations, James. James has had a great career. He's got 14 years of experience in the business. He rose to the position of VP of baseball ops, and he's worked across all aspects of the baseball operation, so he has a lot of experience. These qualities are very important to us moving forward. We think he's a great fit. He's a respected leader. James is young and progressive, recognized for his relationships with the front office and the clubhouse. With our deep, talented group in our front office, James is the right person for us to lead the baseball operations group.
I'll tell you what, man, Jim Crane's done, in my opinion, an excellent job on putting – this front office back together after letting go Jeff Luhnow and A.J. Hinch. And so, of course, he signed Dusty Baker to a one-year deal. He signs James Click to a multi-year deal. I'm not sure if we got the specifics on the amount of years of the deal. But James Click is now the new GM of your Houston Astros. What's your initial reaction when you hear this, Cecil Shorts?
Well, I think Crane did a great job, like you mentioned. I think it was less than a month that the news came out, and he did a good job of doing the best he can of putting this front office together as far as a manager that a lot of people respect around the league.
Yeah.
He's a guy that played a long time, has been coaching for a tremendous long time, and guys around the league have nothing but good things to say about him. I think he's a player's guy. So when you come to the manager, I think that's great. And then you go and you do your research and you find a guy that fits what you do here. I think that's huge. When you find a guy that was in Tampa Bay, and he was in almost every department in Tampa Bay, worked his way up. He understands the analytics. He's part of writing a book about analytics. Like, he is this guy. He's young. He's a guy that can come in and continue to do what you've done. And then in Tampa Bay, I think what one thing stood out, I heard Clinton Glass talking about it yesterday, the amount of resources they had compared to what Houston has, they didn't spend a lot of money.
Yeah, they did more with less, man.
They did more with less. And I was looking at the record since Click was in Tampa Bay. I think he was there for 14 years, from 06 up until last year. They were competitive, man, year in and year out in that tough AL East with Boston and New York. So that was really impressive. Now, he has more resources here it's going to be tougher decisions here, especially after this year when a lot of your outfield is gone, George Springer be up. So people have decisions to make, but he is in a good situation. I'm excited he's here.
Yeah, you mentioned the roster here with the Houston Astros. James Click talked about that yesterday at the press conference.
I got an up-close and personal look at the roster during the 2019 playoffs, and it's an impressive roster. It's one of the things that I'm most excited about in this position. We've all watched the Astros and the things that they've been able to accomplish on the major league level and at the minor league level, and some of the things that they have done to change the way that we all think about the game of baseball. I'm really excited to continue that, to continue to push it forward and to win another championship.
Yeah, so he's not going to have to worry about doing more with less here with the Houston Astros. He's got a stacked roster. And I know Dusty Baker feels the same way of coming here to Houston. He's like, hey, man, you got a team that's already built to win a World Series.
Yeah.
Let me make sure I don't mess it up. And with James Click, he's got to focus on replenishing the club's farm system, man, because the Astros have traded away a bunch of prospects in order to bring in guys like Zach Greinke and Verlander and Gerrit Cole. And so I think that's going to be his number one priority, is to build that back up and then continue, like you mentioned earlier, with the all-in philosophy on the analytical approach to baseball. I think that's huge, that you bring somebody in here that has synergy with what you do here with the Houston Astros and keep pushing that forward.
Now, tell me this, because Dusty Baker has been around forever, 70 years old.
Yeah.
I believe from what I hear and what I've read, he's okay with analytics, but he's more of the old school type, right? And then you got a younger guy, 42 years old, all about analytics. How do you think, it's kind of like an odd couple to me, but how do you think this is going to work with them two in their marriage?
So in theory and on paper, you would say it definitely is an odd couple, and it doesn't match. But I look at Dusty Baker's situation like this, man. Dude is on his last leg. Yep. He was at the crib minding his own business. And then A.J. Hinch gets fired, and this golden opportunity presented itself. So Dusty Baker is going to say, hey, whatever I got to do to get a World Series championship, I think that's what he's going to do. And so he's going to be more willing to be open-minded to some of the analytics that he might have been closed-minded to in the past. And throughout his career, he's gradually gained more a more willingness to accept that analytical approach. Mm-hmm. And so I think this situation right here it's perfect enough for him, and he understands that this is his last opportunity to win a championship. That I don't think that'll be an issue as far as him molding together and doing it the Astros way. And so to me, this is further confirmation by them signing James Click as the GM, that the Astros are going to continue to do business as usual, minus digitally stealing signs from their opponents. But they're going to continue to use the analytical approach and make sure that that is a main focus in what they do going forward.
And going back to the sign situation, don't want to bring up bad stuff, but I think Dusty's a perfect guy to be able to manage this team and keep this team afloat. Like, listen, we're going to be the bad guy in a lot of places, a lot more than what we used to be, because, you know, you go to opposing teams, of course they're going to boo you, but now it's going to be a X on your back. Similar to the Heatles, when LeBron and those guys teamed up together.
Would you call them the Heatles?
The Heatles.
The Heatles. I never heard that one.
You never heard that?
No,
the Heatles?
It makes sense. I mean, I wasn't a fan. Oh, yeah. Maybe I didn't pay attention
to them. Oh, yeah, with Bosh and all those guys. Absolutely. Yeah. Similar to those guys. Different reasons, but similar to how they were hated and everybody's like, why would you team up? Why would you go like this? I think they're going to get that in the MLB. They'll get some trash talk. They'll get some even maybe some players that feel some type of way, like, hey, you guys were cheating or whatever the case may be. I think Dusty is a good guy for that. Now, Click, I'm a little worried. Can he handle it? I shouldn't say worried. Maybe just I guess we'll wait and see. Can he handle everything that's going to go on as far as the media circus and everything when you go to different cities and throughout the year?
Well, I think fortunately for James Click, he has a guy in Dusty Baker that's going to take the brunt of that negativity that the Astros are going to face. And you mentioned it earlier about the alignment between Dusty Baker and James Click. It'll be interesting to see, because you mentioned about the fact that the Astros are going to have to deal with potentially players and backlash because of what happened with the cheating scandal. And guys maybe getting thrown at. And Dusty Baker is one of those managers that if you throw at one of his guys, he is going to get you back. I don't care if it's 2 years later. Eventually, he is going to get you. So I wonder how that jives with the analytical approach with James Click and the Astros in general. Like, hey, is this a time? You know, analytics say, hey, we don't want to potentially risk putting somebody on base. And Dusty Baker will be like, the hell with that. You know what I mean? We got to handle business because you're not going to come at one of ours and don't think that you're going to get something retaliation. So that'll be interesting to see how they work that together, man. And so James Click, the new GM of the Houston Astros, multi-year deal. He's 42 years young. It's kind of interesting today, man, because there's a lot of higher ups in organizations that are like roughly around my age. I don't know if that means I'm getting old or is our league's getting younger. But I like the fact that James Click came up through the Tampa Bay Rays organization. He was probably there long enough to where it used to be the Devil Rays. That's how long he's been there in the organization. But, you know, he's 42 years young. He 14 years experience with the Tampa Bay Rays. And so I'm excited to see about what he does about restoring and replenishing the farm system for the Houston Astros, because it's something that's absolutely necessary. So Astros, new GM, Rockets, new players. Clint Capela got traded to the Atlanta Hawks, so he'll be paired up with Trae Young. Of course, the Rockets get back Jordan Bell and Robert Covington. That's news that we'll be discussing throughout the entire day. But I haven't had an opportunity to talk to Cecil Shorts about what happened on Sunday. And of course, Sunday was Super Bowl Sunday. And I just want to get your initial reactions on this. And this, what I'm talking about, is the initial opening commercial by the NFL when it was the NFL 100 presentation, where they had the little kid run, and he ends up taking the ball and takes it to the field. I thought that the production that they put together for that was award worthy. Like, to me, I'm getting, like, I was ready to play.
And
people ask me all the time, do you miss it? Like, not really. But I tell you what, I was watching that, and I thought they did an excellent job. What'd you think about how the NFL presentation with the commercial, and also with the NFL 100 players that were there in attendance at the stadium before the game?
I think everything was done at an extremely high level. Let's talk about that commercial. So I had a chance to, and you're an ambassador like I am for the Texans, so I had a chance to surprise a kid at an elementary school a couple weeks ago, and he was a part of that commercial.
Oh, he was.
So each team had to pick one player from their particular city to be in that commercial. They had to give their highlights into the NFL, and the NFL sent it out to the teams all around, and this particular kid won. And his highlights were pretty good. He was a linebacker for Fred Weary's team.
Oh, okay.
Out in Shadow Creek.
Okay, Shadow Creek Titans. Yeah, they got little squad out there, man. They got a nice little squad.
So it was pretty cool to see his highlights, and his parents were surprised. He knew he won, but he didn't know that Deshaun Watson was going to give him a personal message. He didn't know that his whole family would be able to go to the Super Bowl. So for him to be in that commercial, and you can see him at the end jumping around, was pretty cool. But the production of that commercial.
Yeah.
To see the legends in that commercial with the kids. It was unbelievable, man. It gave me goosebumps. And like you said, I don't miss the game that much. At certain times I do. But for the most part, I'm like, you know, my time is coming past.
Yeah.
In that moment, I'm like, wow.
You know what?
Wow. It was awesome.
You felt like a little kid again,
absolutely,
man. Because you were watching all of your heroes. You're imagining yourself, you're putting yourself in the shoes of this kid that eventually gets to run onto the field and give the game ball to the referee, say, hey, you know, put the ball down, let's go. But he was the one that did that.
He got to shake hands with Michael Irvin, Deion Sanders, Joe Montana, Franco Harris,
Green, all kind of stuff.
I'm like, what? Yeah. These are legends.
But I tell you what, man, dude has some swag to him. I feel like, you know, 8 to 10 years from now, you're going to see that kid playing at a very, very high level and eventually making it to the NFL. He just looked, you know, some people have it, and they just look, that kid looked like he had it.
No, for real.
And so.
He had the juice.
That was really cool to see. I got to go back and look at the commercial now, or look at the intro, because I didn't put together that there was a representative from each team.
Yeah.
I saw a bunch of kids running out in different jerseys, but I didn't put it together, so I got to check out.
So from each team, there was one representative. Texas. And you'll see the kid from Houston at the very end, because it was focused on that, on the main kid.
Yeah.
But you'll see the kid in Houston at the end of it with number 21 on. When they were pumping the crowd up, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, man, and then Super Bowl halftime performance. Apparently, you were disappointed with what you saw in the Super Bowl halftime performance. I got to get the 411. What's the reasoning behind that?
I respect J-Lo and Shakira. They're awesome performers.
Yeah.
So the performance wasn't bad. It was a good performance. My issue is the NFL, the Super Bowl, whoever, they need to decide if this is going to be a family event or not.
Okay.
Because if you go to a Super Bowl party, or this Super Bowl period, the halftime show and the commercials are probably more popular than the actual game.
This is true.
So
it depends on who you are, but
depends on who you are. But for the average fan, they're very excited to see commercials and the halftime show.
Yeah.
To me, it's a family event. If I take my kids to a sporting event, they want to go, or say a sporting event to me is a family event, right?
Mm-hmm.
When J-Lo is bent over and you see nothing but booty cheeks all on my TV screen, when you're getting on top of a stripper pole.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what you want your kids to see. Like, I have my 8-year-old, my 6-year-old next to me. I'm like, I don't want them to see Shakira and what you call it, doing all this stuff on stage. Now, I get it. That's a part of their culture to dance like that. But for me, I'm just saying, put a little more clothes on.
Well, answer me this, man. How does an 8 or a 6-year-old know what a stripper pole is?
They don't.
And so I think there was a lot of projection of what you might have felt when you saw it, and he's like, oh, okay, that's not a good look. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But a bunch of the kids have no clue what that pole is. And I tell you this, when I was watching the Super Bowl performance, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of watching the ending credits of Zootopia or Rio. That's exactly what it looked like.
Really?
If you go back and look at the ending credits of both of those movies. It looks exactly the same.
Zootopia is a great movie, by the way.
Both of these, they're both great movies, but watch the ending credits of Rio and watch the ending credits of Zootopia.
Okay.
Zootopia, Shakira actually did perform on that outro or whatever, ending credits. So it was her, and she's in a two-piece. Looked very similar. Like, what she was wearing in cartoon version of herself mm-hmm. was more skimpy than what she was actually wearing at the Super Bowl. But that's when I saw it, that's what I thought. I thought to myself, this is like a real live version of what you see at the end of those animated movies where there's all these fireworks and there's waterfalls being shot in the air and there's all this different stuff. It was colorful. To me, it represented, like you mentioned a little bit earlier, represented Miami. Like, it represented the culture.
I love that part.
If you're doing a Super Bowl halftime show in Miami with Shakira and J-Lo, you had to know that was what you was going to get.
They knew. And for me, it bothered me. But when you put it that way, I understand. But it still bothered me. When I got my 8-year-old and 6-year-old next to me, and all I see is booty cheeks in front. That's just like, yo, what is going on right now? But like I said, the performance was good. Like, J-Lo is going to give you a performance.
Yeah.
Shakira's going to give you a performance. That wasn't my issue. And I love that they represented their culture. Miami is, I think, 70% Latino, if I'm not mistaken. And like, it's a huge part of Miami.
Yeah.
The Latino culture. So I love what they had going on. It's just that one little piece bothered me. Now, I would like to see Trick Daddy or something come out.
Yeah, they could have.
Uncle Luke. Yeah. Somebody. Now, Uncle Luke probably been immature too, or not appropriate as well, but yeah, I'd like to see somebody like that.
Yeah, you can't be asking for Uncle Luke and then be mad at what Shakira and J-Lo did, man.
Oh, man.
Hey, but I tell you what, man, the cool thing about it, or the funny thing about it, depending on how you look at it, is that, you know, there was a part in the show where Shakira did, like, she did the little tongue flip deal.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that part where
No.
she flicked her tongue out? And so apparently she's half Lebanese and she's half Colombian, I believe is the country she's from. And so in the Lebanese tradition, that tongue gesture they do just lets people know that they're very happy and they're very excited about something.
That's
so
awesome.
It's basically like representing her culture. But when you just look at it, not knowing what the hell is going on, you're like, why is she flicking her tongue out like that? It reminded me of the movie Scarface, when Manolo was walking around talking to the chicks at the pool, and he was flicking his tongue out like that. Oh, okay. We have a caller that would like to call to talk about this. Is it Tony? I think I know this Tony.
Yeah, you know me. I'm 12 play Tony.
Already. Good morning, Tony. How you doing?
I listen from 6 to 6, baby. I am faithful.
I appreciate you. We appreciate you.
Yes, and I appreciate y'all every step of the way. No, let me tell you something. I went back and did some research because this is getting on my damn nerves about people talking about what these women have on and all that. Your kids, most kids are Googling stuff way worse than this. Okay, I'm going to say that right there. But I went back and did research from 50, from Super Bowl 50. It was Beyonce. Beyonce had her booty cheeks was out. Lady Gaga was 51. Her stuff was out. She had on a bodysuit. Come on, y'all.
That don't mean you got to do it, though. That don't mean I think it's right. That don't mean I think I still don't want my kids to see it. I don't care what Beyonce got on. And Beyonce's performance was a lot different than what Shakira and J-Lo did, if that makes sense. Now, because Beyonce was more of, they had HBCUs out there. It was short, it was skimpy, but she wasn't bent over and you saw everything
but
under the sun.
Let me tell you something.
Yes, ma'am.
I went back to 2013 when Beyonce performed. And
she did do it twice. You're right, she did do it twice.
Yes. So I went back and looked. I'm telling you, I did my research. I didn't want to call without knowing that.
All right, I appreciate that.
Yes. But I'm just saying, come on now. It's the culture. You knew, did you not know that that was going to happen? Did you know Shakira? Have you done your research on Shakira?
The hips don't lie now.
Thank you. So I understand. In this day and age, and I just want to say, and I have to tell people, you have to start explaining stuff ahead of time. You got to tell your kids stuff ahead of time because you don't know what they're going to see on TV. And so I really feel like we should bring it down a notch. And like Wade said, what young child knew that was a stripper pole? And Lady Gaga was on a swing. They got swings in the strip club.
They do.
They do got swings. They got swings in all kinds of places.
About that.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. So I just want to say, like, I'm 50 years old. All of my children are grown. Okay. So I'm not in that realm, you know, with young children now. And back then, I didn't have to explain as much. But sometimes my daughter has had to explain stuff to my grandson. And so I just really feel like we just need to be proactive, not react.
Thank you for the call, Tony. You did an excellent job to give their point of view. And I agree with a lot of things she was saying. Like, first of all, if you're watching and you know that J-Lo and Shakira are going to be performing at halftime, you know that there is a potential that there's going to be some hips moving and there's going to be some booty shaking because that's how they perform. And so it didn't offend me at all. My daughter, when she saw Shakira flick her tongue out, she looked at me and she goes, "Dad, I don't know what to say about that." And my wife and I both started laughing. She was like, "Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that." And we started laughing, but she kind of laughed and just kept it moving. No big deal. But that was some cultural stuff. And they had a bunch of underlying messages in their performance. I thought they did a good job. To me, I wouldn't put it at the level of some of the best Super Bowl performances. But like I said, when I watched it, it made me seem like I felt like I was watching the ending credits of Zootopia. I was watching the ending credits of Rio. And so to me, they did a damn good job. It was a good performance. And people, at the end of the day, your kids are going to see and come across things of that nature in their life. It's an opportunity for a teaching moment. Anytime you get an opportunity for a teaching moment, if your kids saw that and you know, something moved around down low, hey, let's talk about what that, because you got to be able to talk to your kids about the birds and the bees and about things of that nature. And people might say, well, I don't want to do that at that time, but life comes at you fast, and there's going to be times when things have to come up when you're not prepared for them. So I didn't have a problem with it at all, but it is what it is. Well, coming up next on Payne and Pendergrass, we'll talk more about the Rockets trades, the Astros, and much more. Sports Radio 610.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.